Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
George Kurtz on this Memorial Day weekend. A little bit of a rainy day, but that's what George is here for, to brighten the day up. How's it going, George?
Oh, gee, no pressure there. No pressure at all. I got to brighten up a rainy Memorial Day weekend. You know, when I called in, you know, I talked to our producer, Rob Bowe, and, you know, is it a good sign when you're the first thing you pick up your pen on my desk, and it's out of ink?
No.
It's not working.
Very bad sign. I think.
Right, that's a bad sign, isn't it? So I'm afraid now. I'm afraid how the rest of my days. Rob actually advised me to go back to bed. You know, I don't think Mike Cardano would appreciate that, but that's what Rob said. I should go back to bed. That's a bad sign. I should go back to sleep. I like Rob's thinking. I just don't think Mr. Cardano would appreciate that.
You know, I think he may understand though. I think he might if he takes everything into account, really factors it all in. I don't know if I would even want you on air knowing that you woke up with the pen out of ink right away. I mean, how often do... That's honestly a credit to you, though, that you use the pen enough for it to run out of ink. Typically, pens are lost well before you even get to that point.
I'm one of those people where, you know, the things on my desk need to be on my desk. You know, put things back, please. You know, my wife and kids take things, you know, the scissors. I mean, I can never find a pair. We have like 18 pairs of scissors in this house. And that's, by the way, not much of an exaggeration. Probably have about 8-9 pair. And I can never find a pair of scissors. Because God forbid anybody should put them back where they belong. Which is like an 18 drawers in the house. And it's like, always looking for a pair of scissors. So they know, don't touch my pen. Please, for the love of God, don't touch the pen on my desk.
I don't think you're asking for much there. Thank you for listening on TuneIn, iHeart, or the Fantasy app. If you want to call in and talk to George or myself, questions with anything going on in the sports world, the number is 844-843-6879. You can also reach us on Twitter. I am at the Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz because he's a simple man. He keeps it simple for you people. It's at George Kurtz. I think that is truly incredible that you and Mike Blewett both just got at both first and last name. I truly think that's an incredible accomplishment.
I mean, it depends, I guess, how common the name is. I know there's another George Kurtz out there because apparently he's in the finance. I don't know what, like a finance, something like that. Because every now and then I get his tweets. And I'm like, oh wow, that's nice. There's someone added me and go, hey, congratulations. I guess this is how George Kurtz has done some big things. I don't know. I have no idea. Honestly, I have no idea who it is. But I find that funny when I get his. Tweets going to him that say congratulations for doing this on this speaking engagement. I'm like, oh yeah, thanks.
That's pretty terrific. There's like a number of Kevin Walsh's. I know this because my dad is Kevin Walsh, so I know that there's at least more than one. I don't think I've ever received congratulations on behalf of a different Kevin Walsh. Now I hope one day to see that. Now, George, again, I know you're not big into basketball, but last night there was another big basketball game where the Warriors play the Rockets. The Warriors obviously were the heavy favorites going into the game, but also going into the season. The fact that they were down 3-2, the fact that they were playing a road game 6 and they needed to win 2 in a row, including a road game 7 to get back to the NBA Finals, has certainly caught people off guard. But last night's game was an interesting one, and I want to see if I could perhaps draw a comparison to hockey, and just for a reference point. Last night's game, the Warriors ended up really running the Rockets out of the building after the Rockets looking really great in the first quarter. They looked pretty good in that second quarter, but they ended up getting the doors blown off them. And one of the things that really stood out from that game was the officiating. And typically, you know, any game you can make any type of gripe with refs, especially in basketball, right? It's one of those things where it's similar to offensive linemen. There's holding on every play. It feels like there's a foul on every play, and it's a matter of what gets called. However, this felt different when you saw the reactions throughout the timeline. There was a callback to the very famous series between the Lakers and the Kings, where there's quite the conspiracy theory that the game was rigged for the Lakers to win. And I don't think that people were suggesting that this game was necessarily rigged, but just it felt uncomfortable and it felt strange to see the officiating be as lopsided as it was, or just the lack of whistles that existed in the game. And the reason why I wanted to see if there could be a comparison to hockey, and again, because officials in all sports, depending on the outcome of the game, one side will be really upset with them, and the other side will probably be like, oh, they were fine. And I'm just curious, in hockey, though, has there ever been to a point where people feel like the refs are actually somewhat tanking a game or trying to throw a game and legitimately to affect the outcome?
Hockey has had that reputation probably before the NBA. It's gone away now. But at one point, yeah, hockey had that reputation. Hockey has always had a reputation of doing things differently, mainly because, as you and I discussed yesterday, hockey is the redheaded stepchild of sports, right? It's fourth, you know, maybe fifth, depending on how – actually, even sixth, we're going to go soccer and NASCAR, where it is as far as the national standing here. So hockey has always come into – they do things – you know, not for the best of the game, but for the best of the business, the best of the industry. You know, back in the 80s, there was a referee called Andy Van Helleman, very good ref, but a lot of people thought he was the Islanders' personal referee. And what I mean by that is when the Islanders were winning all the cups, you know, they won four straight cups and were a great team back in the mid to early 80s, that Van Helleman was the ref who would give them all the calls. You know, and a lot of that's, you know, BS. The Islanders were a great team, and great teams tend to get those calls. Nowadays, that seems to have gone away. Nowadays, it's just that, you know, the refs suck, you know, which is a lot of it. That's probably more true than anything else. Like any sport, you said it. In football, there is holding every play. There is pass interference almost every play. It's a matter of the degree and what the ref is going to call and what he's not going to call. I've been reffing men's hockey games for 25 years, you know, and I always tell myself, as far as calling penalties, I'm not calling a penalty unless my hand goes up in hockey. If the ref's hand goes up, that's a penalty. Unless my hand goes up and I can't stop it. And with that, to me, what that means, it was such an obvious penalty that, you know, there's nothing I could do. My hand automatically went up. If I had to think about it, I'm not calling it. Okay. And I wonder, you know, if these professional referees in the professional sports, of what their degree is. You know, some referees are calling every little thing. Take their, you know, ticky-tack fouls. They call every little thing. Some really want you to almost murder somebody to call. And there's no doubt we see this in baseball, right? We see it in football, too. I'm sure we see it in basketball. We see it in hockey. Third period, late in the game, the last half of the game, you could commit bloody murder, and they're not calling anything. In baseball, all of a sudden, the strike zone shrinks to the size of a cereal box. Right? I mean, we see this over and over again with the refs. What they call in the first period or first quarter of a game is not what they're going to call later in the game as the game goes on. It's unfortunate. It is how most sports are refereed, because as a referee, we're also sort of trained you don't want to affect the outcome of the game, which I agree with. But if you're calling it differently and you're letting one team get away with murder late, well, then you are affecting the outcome of the game, even if you're not calling anything.
I think that's a great point. And look, ultimately, in this specific incident, the Warriors ended up winning the game by 29 points. The Rockets turned the ball over 21 times. They only shot 40% from the field. And the Warriors had some of their best guys show up in a big-time game. So I don't think that we can really look at this game and necessarily say that it was rigged, that the officiating completely threw the game. There was some... It was questionable no calls, specifically on the Rockets star, James Harden. But I think your overall point is a really good one. It's just, I don't think we're ever really going to be happy with officiating. And I remember I was having a conversation with my brother when there was kind of starting to float around this idea of whether they would have the automatic strike zone in baseball and whether they would kind of just have...
Yes, the umpire. Please.
So they, you know, they'd have the umpire behind there, and I guess he kind of just repeats whatever the robot, the computer, whatever it would be, to give the strike zone. You're in favor of it. So why are you in favor of it?
Because I think the easiest way to affect the outcome of a game, and once again, I'm not saying that they're on the take, they've been bribed, but that's that. What we've heard forever is the veteran starting pitcher gets a bigger strike zone than the rookie starting pitcher. Whenever I hear this, I go insane. That the zone is different because someone's pitched for 20 years. I mean, what was the maybe you don't remember, but the Braves in the 90s were known for the getting a bigger plate because they had good control. So Maddux and Glavine would get a 22-inch plate. You know, where the rookie gets 16. You know, he doesn't even get the 18. So that used to drive me insane. That they call it. You see it all the time. If you watch the K Zone, which I like, and a lot of people bitch about, but I like the K Zone that whether it's ESPN or ES uses. So I get an idea. Not that I think it's the end all to be all, but I get an idea how bad the plate umpire is. I think if you want to make the game faster, that'll make the game quicker. You can't argue with the computer. Now, you still the union really can't. The home plate umpire doesn't lose his job. You still need him back. They still got check swings. You got to worry about plays at the plate and all this other stuff.
Right.
But I'd much rather have a red light, green light, red light strike behind the thing, green light ball, and move on. And more importantly, the zone is the same for everyone. It doesn't change depending on the pitcher. You know, and I like that much better. I mean, you've seen stats now that strikes called to Aaron Judge. One of every four strike calls to Aaron Judge are wrong. It's the highest in baseball. And it's because umpires can't adjust to his size. You know, they're still calling a low strike. That's to him, it's low. Yes, to normal people, it's a strike. He's not a normal person. You know, in this way, I think the game would be quicker. You'd get rid of these disagreements. The arguments, the batter's all of a sudden doing a wander around home plate because the umpire screwed up. And, the catcher talked to him. You know, I don't like it. I don't like all this pitch framing where the catcher's getting strikes because they know how to frame a pitch even though the ball's 3 inches outside. You know, if I'm an umpire, as soon as I see the catcher catch that ball, then move his glove to try and get the call, ball. Apparently, you don't think it's a strike because you moved your glove. You know, so it's, like I said, I much prefer the robot umps.
You know, it's funny. I think I've come around on the whole idea. When I very first had that kind of conversation, I was telling him, I was like, human error is a part of it. Human error is a part of it. And he just kind of, he looked at me and he was like, why do you want human error to decide baseball games? And I was like, I had nothing. I really didn't. And one of the things that I always do point back to, and it's a separate issue, but do you remember the perfect game, the play at first base? I think his name was Galarraga, the starting pitcher on the Tigers. I think that
Correct.
Was right. That was his name. And obviously it was in the blown call. Was it Joyce was the ump? I think who messed
yes.
the call up, right? So and I remember that, and I remember I was crushed. I was crushed as someone watching it. I still have no idea how being the pitcher you could ever really live with that. I don't know how you could live with that with the umpire. And that's why I always said you needed to replay. And I kind of started to think about it. And honestly, in a way, it's the same thing where human error got that wrong in a massive way. And just because, you know, replay is us watching it, but it is still kind of relying on that technology to get things right. And I think you make an incredible point in terms of just the strike zone too frequently changes. And there is really, listen, there is no room to just give leeway based on the number of years that someone's been around in the league. I remember when Cam Newton was coming off that Super Bowl win, I think it was that very first game against the Broncos, he took a number of vicious, vicious hits to the head. And they picked up on the mic because sometimes they mic these guys up. And one of the refs said to Cam, you haven't been around long enough to earn that call. Which, first of all, he was like the reigning MVP. That's kind of insane to make that point. But you just because if Tom Brady took the same scramble and then ended up getting hit in the head does not mean that you should be throwing the flag quicker for him than if it were to be Cam Newton. So I agree with you, too. You should want to get rid of this bias towards longevity. I think that is it's a little silly.
I would agree. The Cam Newton situation was ridiculous. I mean, and we've seen this as well. And I think a part of Cam Newton is because he's a big, strong guy. You know, and those guys don't tend to get the calls. But the calls he wasn't getting, some of them I thought legitimately weren't calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't call every little thing. But some of them were like, how do you not call this? Like, it's obvious late hit on a quarterback or high hit, whatever you want to call it. You know, and he's still not getting it. That when I heard that excuse that you haven't been around long enough, I said, that just makes me cringe. Really makes me cringe. You know, I can understand, maybe I can understand a borderline call, but these were obvious ones. I didn't think it mattered how long you've been in the NFL, a day or a decade, where it shouldn't have mattered. The human error thing, to me, is silly. I mean, this is big-time professional sports now. Mm-hmm. What do we always say? Or everybody says, it's a business.
Yeah.
Well, it's true. It is. And guess what? People lose their jobs because it could be one play, one game. You know, this was a play in a Seattle-New York Jets football game. It involved Vinny Testaverde trying to sneak the ball into the goal line for a touchdown. Refs ruled that he didn't get in. There was no replay at the time. Replay showed he did get in. But people got fired. Or it might have been vice versa, by the way, that he didn't get in. They ruled he did. I forget which way it went. People got fired from that game. Yeah, where it would have made a difference. And, you know, something like that shouldn't happen. There was a World Series game, the Royals in St. Louis back in the 80s. I think it was Don Dinkinger blew a call at first base. That affected the game. I mean, why do we want human error? Is it okay? Oh, Doc. Oh, I'm sorry. Your husband died. Human error, buddy. Now, hey, sorry. Mm. We move on. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Human error, we don't want that in any other industry other than professional sports. Why on earth would you want that? Why wouldn't you want to get the call right? And don't get me wrong. We go a little nuts in baseball and football now. Where he's off the base by a millimeter. He's out. I get it. Technically, he's out. I get it. I wish replay wasn't really used for that, but... You know, it still doesn't bother me. Football, the ball moving a fraction of a centimeter. No catch. That wasn't really what replay was intended for, but it's become that because of the technology. We have the high def. We can see everything. But even that, I still don't mind it because, well, the call is still right. Now, he didn't catch the ball, that he was out. So I said, I'm all for it. You know, I think, especially for the home plate umpire, it's coming. I truly believe it's coming. And I want to get rid of the home plate umpire in a big way.
I think it's fantastic points. And I think, too, you have to try to find a way to do that, all of that stuff, within reason, right? Like, we don't want in basketball to have every single foul review. That would be infuriating, and it would be nauseating, and then it would impact the way the game is played. But, and again, as you mentioned, because, George, you've been spot on with all of this, bringing in the automated strike zone could actually speed up the game, and it's been one of the things that the MLB has been trying to accomplish now, it feels like, for forever. We'll talk a little bit more about this when we come back here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
That's right. We are back here on Fantasy Sports Today.
That's a little shout out to the Best Friends Forever music right there.
I want to tell you, though, about DailyRoto.com, because you've heard about DailyRoto.com's dollar month here on the network, but I wanted to put it in context for you. Let's say you buy a lottery ticket, you pay your dollar, pick a bunch of numbers, and that's it. You then clutch the ticket and you hope. Now, let's say you take that dollar and you try DailyRoto.com's dollar month. You pay your dollar, you get access for 30 days, and you're transported into a world that has produced 5 millionaires. Take destiny into your own hands and go to DailyRoto.com. Enter the code $1. That's DailyRoto.com and enter the code $1. No space, it's all one word, $1. And see if you can make it 6 millionaires. You got to go over there and try out DailyRoto.com. George, we were kind of talking about this officiating stuff, and I find it interesting, and I wanted to keep the conversation going by bringing in our producer, Rob Bowe, because I know he played baseball at the high school level. I think he was a catcher, too, so I think that he could probably, add another opinion to this. So, Rob, what are your thoughts on actually moving over to an automated strike zone in baseball? Do you feel like it's maybe too drastic of a change? Is it something that you would be a fan of? What are your thoughts?
First of all, Kevin, I was a pitcher, so...
Pitcher? I knew it was one of the two. One of the two.
Personally, I don't really like the idea because I'm not really a fan of the whole replay thing. I mean, when it helps my team, I'm a fan of it. But like, just in the game in general, I mean, it kind of just like takes it away, and I think it like kind of just like drags it out. But I could understand why people would want the automated umps and all that stuff, just so like everything is like to a T perfect. But I think that's what makes baseball more fun, is that like there's like almost like a little bit of like a wild card to it. I could see the other side where like you would want everything to be like exactly how it should be. You know what I mean?
When you were pitching, did you ever feel as if perhaps the umpire was giving you a different strike zone than the other pitcher?
Not really. I feel like you kind of just base where you're going to pitch based off of where you see the ump is calling for the other pitcher.
Mm.
Or based off of the people that are hitting on your team. Like, someone strikes out looking or something like that or whatever, and it's a low pitch, like they're going to say like, all right, he's calling everything low, or like you're going to get the corner, you're going to get lower, blah, blah, blah. So I think like that adds like – I think it adds another element to the game, because it's like that's just one more thing as a pitcher that one you could use to get a hitter out, or one – I forgot what my other point was, but you know what I mean.
Well, no, I actually like that point though, in terms of it adds a – another layer of strategy, I guess.
That's what I meant.
You know, I mean, George, I think ultimately, and I'm not saying that it's going to push you off the idea of moving toward the automatic strike zone. It isn't for me either. But is that at least a fair point in terms of it can add an element of strategy where you have to then adapt to where the strike zone is, or does that just add on to why you have a problem with what we currently have?
Oh, it absolutely adds another layer of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I was a pitcher as well. And it wasn't, and it's nowhere near extensive at the level I was pitching at compared to a major league level. But you know what the umpire calls and what he doesn't. And once again, that's a joke, that he won't call the outside strike, or he won't call the end, he won't call whatever, he won't call the high strike, or he will. Or he has, you know, this umpire has a huge strike, so this one has a small strike, so you have to know that, you know. And don't kid yourself, at the major league level, they're scouting the umpires. You know, they're absolutely scouting the umpire. They do it in football. I mean, well, we always heard about John Randall, the ex-defensive end for the Missouri Vikings, would personally scout the referee. He'd know their names, their kids' names, to be nice to them. You know, and that's just the way the game is played. And in baseball, they're certainly scouting the umpire, so they know where their hot zone is, where their cold zone is. You know, and you think about the umps. Now, once again, I'm 48, so I've been following baseball since the 70s. Back then, they used the balloon chest protectors, and they stood right over the catcher's head, right dead center of the plate, so they could call both sides. Where does the umpire sit now? Mm. Generally on the inside corner, you know, over one shoulder, which means he's guessing on the outside corner. He's just, because he can't see it. Mm. There's no way you could see it, you know, and so he's guessing on whether that really pitches a strike or not. You know, I understand it's more aesthetically pleasing that they got rid of the balloons, you know, because now you're nice, sleek, you can move, but it's also hurt the game. Because I think umpiring was better as far as balls and strikes back then, because they could actually get a better idea of the outside corner than they can now. I think that's a mistake. And so, you know, they'll never go back to it, but I think that's what started all this, where the umpires were guessing. But it all come back to, even with all that, you can say what you want. That if it was the same for both pitchers, I probably wouldn't bother me as much. So it's not about getting the call right. It's always about the fact that it's not the same for both pitchers. And so you go back to it over and over again. The veteran's going to get more of the call. The Hall of Famer is going to get more of a call than a rookie, or than a guy who's an average regular. And that, to me, that's just not fair, and it drives me insane.
You know, it's a fascinating discussion to me, and it's not at all where I intended on going. I was just talking about hoops, but I do find it to be incredibly interesting to see if they will make that change. Like you said, that you think that it's going to come, and eventually, honestly, and. At first, I was hesitant, but I think it was just kind of, you know, being a little bit fearful of adapting to something new. But the idea, it makes sense. And listen, if you text me with arguing for and then text me with arguing against, it's a lot easier to argue for it, and it makes a lot more sense. Now, let's move over fully to baseball, because yesterday we got caught up in a number of things, and we didn't get to touch on a lot of stuff that happened in baseball. Now, you mentioned you've been watching since the 70s, and I cannot imagine that you've seen many, if any, guys as good or better than Mike Trout.
It's amazing how good this man is. I mean, and it's funny, You know, I'm the Yankee fan, so I'm watching the game last night. I got Trout on my he's on my fantasy team, my home league, the league I care about the most. So, you know, it's one of those nights where, oh, Yankees lost, damn, but Trout had a monster night. That's kind of good. You know, so yeah, you feel a little bit better about that loss. You're not the best. He's the best overall player in the game. Although Mookie Betts may be cutting that down a little bit, but he could do it all. I mean, when he hits the ball hard, he gets up the gaps. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark, right field, center field, left field. No, I don't even think. I think we discussed this yesterday. I don't even think you can compare players from this generation to other generations. You know, the players are bigger, stronger, faster. They take care of their bodies all year round. It's just different than the way it is. You know, I made the comparison yesterday that, you know, the 70s Steelers would probably get crushed by even bad football teams in this day and age because of the size difference and the speed difference. The game is just different. The players are different. The people are different. It's just the way it is. Mickey Mantle, who's considered one of the best baseball players ever, size-wise is the size of an average shortstop in this day and age. You know, human beings are just bigger, stronger than they were back in the 50s and 60s and obviously beyond that. So, and Trout is one of those people, Aaron, you look at Aaron, someone like Aaron Judge, who granted is a freak, but it's the same thing there. Trout is, he's fun to watch. You know, I think baseball does a pretty poor job of marketing. They should get Trout out there more because he's good for the game. He's, by all accounts, he seems to be a good person, not a jerk or someone you wouldn't want to build around. So, but he's fun to watch, and it's hard. What I find with Trout, not just he's on my fantasy team, but it's hard to root against him. You know, 'cause you want to see what he can do, how far he can hit the ball, how hard he can hit the ball. And unfortunately for Sonny Gray last night, Gray found out just exactly how hard he can.
So Trout last night was 5 for 5 with 4 RBIs. He had a 2-run shot, and he had 3 doubles. It was the first time in his career that he had gone 5 for 5. Also, the most total bases he had ever racked up in a game. So you're talking about one of the best that baseball's ever seen, had arguably the best game of his career against Sonny Gray last night. And I remember the 2-run shot, that play, and they were talking about it on the broadcast. They were like, all right, you don't have to mess around here. There's an open base. He's already got a pair of doubles off you. There is simply no reason to – That is a long way gone. Why did you decide to go after him? Especially, too, what I found so odd about that is he started in a 2-0 hole. I don't understand why he even bothered testing him after getting down 2-0, and Trout made him pay big time.
Yeah, Boone tried to defend it in the post-game interviews afterwards, saying he didn't want to put the go-ahead run at second base or something like that. That's really silly. Boone made a mistake. You know, sometimes I know no one's ever going to admit that, but I would like just the manager to say, listen, I blew it. You know, should have walked him. Really should have walked him. I mean, it was the fourth inning, so I understand, you know, you're putting extra runners on base. You don't want to do it, but Trout had already hit 2 doubles off of Gray. He'd been, you know, eating his lunch, and he was hot in the series. Right. You know, he had a home run the night before, too. The man's hot right now. You know, not that there's ever a time he's really not hot, but he was smoking hot right now. Put him on base. What is Poole? I think Justin Upton bats after him. I mean, Upton's a nice batter, but he's not Mike Trout. If you get beat by Upton, you get beat by Upton. I'm a big believer in not letting the hot guy beat you. You know, not letting it happen. You know, once again, Yankee fan, love Joe Torre. Joe Torre seemed to love to get beat by Manny Ramirez and or David Ortiz, where he could have walked one or the other. It's like, you know, why do you do it? Why put him on base? Once again, let somebody else beat you for a change. You know, let Upton beat you. Let Pujols beat you. Let's not let Mike Trout. And teams have been – I've doing the Slack channel for – which is where people can ask questions to Roto experts. Someone keeps wanting to trade Trout for Betts. Yeah, and well, part of the argument has been people – they're walking Trout over and over again. No one's pitching to him anymore. You know, and listen, as a Trout owner, that was true. They were walking him an awful lot, but I still could – I told him I can't make that deal. You should be able to get more than just Mookie Betts. I get great that it's great, but it's Trout. You know, it's Mike Trout. You're gonna trade him for full value and get everything you can. But I understood what the person was talking about, that he was angry about all people pitching around Trout. Well, Boone should have done the same thing in that situation. I don't think you should always pitch around him, especially now that he's running and stealing bases. But Boone definitely should have walked him. As you said, though, once he got the 2-0, this was a no-brainer.
Yeah, and he blew it. And I think you're right. That would be admirable to see them kind of be like, eh, hand up. That was on me. I shouldn't have done that. You mentioned Mookie Betts, and I did want to ask you just where we're at in this season. We've played, 40 to 50 games for most teams. And these two guys have clearly been the two best to start the year, right? So Trout is hitting .313, 17 home runs, tied with Betts for the lead league, 34 RBIs, and he leads all of baseball with an on-base percentage at .461, and he's also swiped 12 bags. He's yet to be caught. Trout, or Betts on the other side of that, leads all of baseball with a .359 average, again, tied with Trout for the lead league, and 17 home runs. He's got three more RBIs with 37, has stolen one more base than Trout with 13 swipes, although he's been caught twice, and his on-base percentage a bit lower at .437, but still one of the absolute best. I mean, at this point in time, and listen, it is, we have so much baseball to play, right? I think every single team has over 100 games left to play in the season. But you look at these two right now. Would you be able to choose one or the other for MVP at this point? Because I do think it is quite clearly it's these two, and then there is everybody else in terms of that discussion.
Oh, well, you're right about that. It's definitely the Mike Trout, Mookie Betts division, and then everybody else. Now I'm one of those people, I've said it many times, I don't care. I don't care who wins MVP, Cy Young. I think some of it's not because I don't like talking about it. I think it is fun to talk about. Mm-hmm. But it won't bother me either way. Even if a Yankee was involved, I wouldn't care. You know, I think it's, some of it's political. I think some of we've heard over the years, our writers have voted for one of their own, the players they cover, because of deals they've made, stuff like that. And yeah, and I think it's a little political also, because if you don't vote for somebody on your own team, well, maybe they don't give you the coverage. They don't give you the inside scoop. So I get that as well. It's your job. You got to protect it. But so like I said, I sort of lost interest in these awards a long time ago. That being said, I mean, if you forced me, if I had to vote for somebody, it's tough. I mean, it's really tough. Trout is having the best season of his career. Think about that. Think about that. All right, so the best season of his career for the numbers he's already put up. His OPS is off the charts. They're both terrific defenders. So you can't separate it there. I might give Mookie a little edge there, but Trout's a very good defender too. I mean, we're hearing all about Mookie Betts, so you know that you can hear the term East Coast bias. We're not hearing enough about Trout, which is kind of ridiculous, but I get where that's coming from. I guess because he's having the best season of his career, I got to go Trout. But like I said, if you're voting Betts, I'm not arguing with you. I have no problem going with Betts. It's a coin flip right now, either way. I'm very thankful, as far as the awards going, that there is another 108 games left or whatever it is. You know, maybe one of these two will separate each other, right? Because they're both having, absolute fantastic seasons.
Yeah, it really, right now, it is these two guys and it is everybody else. I don't know if you saw the piece that was on ESPN. I think it was a week or two ago. But Trout is basically, I know at the time of the article, and I don't know if he still is, but on pace to have, statistically, pretty much the greatest season of all time in terms of WAR. I think the current record is held by Babe Ruth, and Trout was on pace and still might be on pace to actually break the all-time single-season WAR record. And one of the things for me is, listen, when it comes to advanced statistics, people live and die by them too much. You have to find a way to use them appropriately, but they shouldn't be your end-all, be-all, right? And you have to kind of sift through it and figure out which ones are good and which ones are bad. One of the reasons why I'm a very, very big believer in WAR is because every year, Trout seems to have the best WAR, and I know he's the best player. So it makes me feel pretty darn good that it's an accurate measurement. And one of the things that stands out when you look at just across the league, the third best WAR in all of baseball is Jose Ramirez at 3.1. Now, fourth is Lindor at 2.9. Fifth is Aldrich and Simmons at 2.7. So you see there's a close gap there. Well, Jose Ramirez, who is at 3.1, is at a full point behind Betts, who is at 4.1. And then why it's so incredible is, we've seen how good Betts is, and still Trout is almost a full point better than him at 4.9. He is almost doubling up guys that are top five in WAR. It is unbelievable how good he is, and the fact that there is, just simply put, there is not a single hole in his game.
No, and he's gotten better. You know, he's one of those guys, sort of like Sidney Crosby in hockey, who works on something during the offseason that he hasn't been good at. You know, I think he was swinging at high strikes a couple of years back, so he worked on that. Where he can, you know, now he crushes those pitches. He's amazing. I mean, he's a natural born talent to play the game. So is Mookie. I mean, like I said, they're both great players, and I have no problem with the debate with people who get upset over one or the other. I mean, I think that's when it gets a little silly. They're both fantastic players, having fantastic years. Enjoy them. You know, unless they're not on your fantasy team, then I can understand you being a little upset about it. But enjoy what we're seeing here, because you're seeing two monster seasons. You're seeing the, and they're going to be around for a long time. You know, these players are still young; they're in their 20s. They're going to be around forever. So it'll be good for the Red Sox, good for the Angels, and we'll be able to enjoy this talent in the game for what, another decade, 12, 15 years.
I think that is a phenomenal point. Don't dig your feet in right now in trying to decide between one of the two and all of a sudden, build up a battle. Because not only are they too good for that, but they're too young for that. I think that's an incredible point. Trout is only 26 right now, and Betts is only 25. So there is, at the minimum, at least a whole nother decade, probably, of these two guys being two of the absolute best that baseball has to offer. We're come back. We're going to stick with the MLB. On the other side of the Mike Trout beatdown was the New York Yankees and the return of Greg Bird. So we'll talk about that here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
We are back here on Fantasy Sports Today. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. And we were just talking about the monster game that Mike Trout had. For anybody that missed it, it was a masterclass. Maybe the best game of his career. 5 for 5, 4 RBIs, 3 doubles, and a home run, a two-run shot. On the other side of that for the Yanks, though, right? The game started off with a pair of back-to-back jacks by Gardner and Judge. They ended up getting 4-1, and then they lose the game 11-4. I'll tell you one thing, George. When Gardner hit that home run to lead the game off, I was like, he was listening to the show. He heard George say that we got to move him out, down in the order. He's showing George what's up. And then he was just, you didn't do anything else the rest of the game.
Yeah, I'm sure Brett was upset with me. As he crushed that shot, the second deck, too, about 10 rows deep in there. So then Judge followed one, hit one of them, 450 feet into the bullpen, over the bullpen, actually, in right center. That was a shot and a half. Mm-hmm. And you would think that would have been a good night for the Yankees. You know, who would have thought the, was it, I forget who was pitching for the Angels now, Barry, I believe. Yeah. Who would have thought he would have lasted longer than Sonny Gray in that game? So it started off well for the Yankees and pretty much went downhill after that.
It certainly did. Now, one of the big things that we were keeping an eye on coming into this game was Greg Bird. First game of the year for him. Went 0 for 4, struck out twice. And I mean, look, the expectations are not that this guy's going to come up and was going to, match Mike Trout today. But was there anything that you saw from Bird, how he looked? Did he look rusty, just an off day at the plate? Was there anything that stood out to you from the Bird ABs?
No, I mean, looked like Bird. You know, Greg didn't get any hits, but he looked fine, looked comfortable, certainly looked comfortable in the field. So, it's a baseball game, went 0 for 4, big deal. Mm-hmm. You move on. He's going to have a lot of 0 for 4s this year. So I don't take anything over because he didn't hit 16 home runs yesterday and drive in 9 runs. Listen, it's a baseball game. He'll be fine. I think the bigger takeaway was who they sent down. They sent down Torres for him.
Yeah.
Which was ended up being probably a bigger story than it should have been. I mean, it was funny. Some of the tweets that were coming on from the Yankee beat writers, how they were going to rename the Cross Bronx Expressway, which is I-87. They're going to name it I-74 in honor of Torres, because that's also the kind of, I guess, feedback that the Yankees were getting. Was sending him back. Everybody was upset about it. Listen, somebody good was going to have to go down.
Yeah.
I mean, did Torres deserve to go down? No, he didn't. Does Brandon Drury deserve to be in the minor leagues? No. Mm-hmm. But the Yankees are loaded offensively. They're loaded. someone has to go. And they prefer to keep the extra relief pitchers. So they didn't send down A.J. Cole. You know, didn't send away Chasen Shreve, whose jaw, by the way, is hanging by a string with how poorly he's pitching. You know, they didn't send these guys down. So they have, what, starting Saturday, 14 games in 13 days or something like that. Mm. And Boone and Cashman want to keep the extra relief pitcher. I get it. Yeah, you know, I do understand that. And as much as I do like Torres, nice little utility guy, you don't need him. Like I said, you need a second baseman. Neil Walker plays second base. You need a shortstop. Torres goes over to short, and Walker plays second again. You know, you need a third baseman. Walker can play third. So Torres is an extra. You just don't need it right now.
It was one of those things. I mean, I'm a fan of Torres as well. But like you said, someone had to go down. On that point, though, that you make there, right? Because that is kind of the thing with the Yankees, right? Brandon Drury probably should be on a roster. Maybe he should probably be starting every day. Clint Frazier still being in the minors probably shouldn't be the case. The thing for the Yankees, though, right, is you mentioned they're loaded, and you say they're loaded offensively, but that's just the thing. You know, this Sonny Gray performance, I think he's bottom three in ERA amongst all pitchers in baseball right now. He's been really, really bad. And they made the move for him last year, and it didn't work out. And I know it is early in the year, but we saw a couple trades the other day that we are going to discuss after this. You know, teams are going to move. And I just wonder for the Yanks, not that it's necessarily a panic, but it's just when you consider everything, do they need to start really figuring out who's going to be moved for arms? Or is that something where you'd still maybe not get into, to, you know, giving up big name talents just to bring in some pitchers?
Oh, no, the Yankees have to make some moves here. Listen, they're going to make the playoffs. You know, we discussed this yesterday. There aren't five better teams than the Yankees in the American League. Okay? There's just not. The America, really, baseball has haves and have-nots. Mm-hmm. And the Yankees are one of the haves. You know, you want to say Boston's going to win the division over them? Quite possible. And that's true. You know, you give Cleveland the Central. You give Houston out West. Name me two wildcard teams that are finishing higher than the Yankees. Yeah. Silence, because that's what it is. Yeah, I don't know if I can name one. You know, so the Yankees are making the playoffs, which means this whole next 100-plus games is all about setting up for the playoffs. Yeah, and that's what it's all about here. Yankees, number two star is Tanaka. His ERA is approaching five, giving up home runs by the bucket load. Three is Gray. You saw how poorly he has pitched. I don't care who the catcher is, by the way. Romine Sanchez, it doesn't matter. He's pitched poorly. He's really... He actually pitched okay last year. He got more bad luck. He was pitching well, but didn't get the wins. This season's been a disaster. CeCe Sabathia is not going to last the entire season. He's five innings and fly. He's a bullpen killer. And then you don't have a fifth starter right now. You know, Domingo Germán had the great original start. He's going to bomb the next two. Yeah, you know, they have issues. You know, Jordan Montgomery will be back in about a month, but he still is not a savior. Not even close. He's just a number five starter. They as good as their minor league system is, pitching is well behind the hitting. There is pitching there, but it's not ready yet. You might get Justin Sheffield, who just came up the DL in the minor leagues in August. He could certainly help because he eventually is a Major League Baseball starting pitcher too, but not this season. So the Yankees are going to have to make some deals. I say deals because they may need more than one starting pitcher here. They certainly need one. You know, there are some names out there. I mean, Michael Fulmer was somebody the Yankees were trying to get during the offseason but couldn't come together on an agreement with Detroit. And you know, if you're Detroit, you're going to be bad for a few years. By the time you get good, Fulmer's going to have arbitration. He's going to have maybe a real contract. So he's going to be very expensive. It might make sense for them to talk with the Yankees again. Get two to three prospects. You know, you might be able to get a Clint Frazier, Chance Adams, and something else. You're not getting Torres, and I don't know if you'll even get Andujar. You know, so but you'll be able to get, you know, you'll be able to get good prospects from the Yankees. Somebody brought up Cole Hamels. I was talking to him on Twitter yesterday. I forget who it was. I apologize. But Cole Hamels is interesting, but you know, he makes $20 million next season, plus the prorated whenever they acquire him this season. I don't think he's going to want to pay $30 million for Cole Hamels, who's not the pitcher he used to be. He's still better than really most of what they have outside of Severino, but he's not the guy I think is going to shut down the Red Sox or the Astros or Cleveland for that matter in October. You know, so I don't know if you want to pay the price monetarily and prospect-wise for someone like Cole Hamels. You're not going to get Chris Archer because Tampa Bay is not trading Chris Archer to the Yankees or the Red Sox for that matter. I just doubt that happens, you know, trade within the division, that sort of thing. You know, I think you and I discussed it yesterday. The DeGrom thing or Thorpe, for, you know, that's just laughable.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way the Yankees and Mets ever work out a deal. Why not just say you're going to get Chris Sale from the Red Sox? You know, it's not going to happen, ever. So I said they'll have to make some calls here, but there's not a lot out there as far as not yet. You know, once again, we're May 27th here. There's not a lot out there as far as high-end pitching talent that would help the Yankees in October. This is where, like I said, this is the key. It's not the regular season. They're not looking for somebody to win regular season games. They need guys who can win in October, and I just don't know if they're going to be able to find that.
I think that I think it's very well said, but it is one of the things that they need to figure out, because it's not only that they are so depleted at pitching, but it's that they are overstacked offensively. So you do have an abundance of guys that you have to move on from. I do think the Yankees are in a position where I could see them finding it difficult at points to trade with teams. One, I wonder if people are going to be a little worried to deal with Cashman just the way how he's been dominating a lot of the moves that he's been making. But two, when people look at the talent, right, that the Yankees have, and because they're young, they're gonna ask, right? Like, I remember when Judge and Sanchez first came up, and you know, it was like, oh, we couldn't trade those guys. And now it is obviously clear that neither one of them are gonna go anywhere. So then the attention is gonna turn to the Andujars and the Gleyber Torreses. But I don't know if either of those guys are gonna go anywhere. I think Clint Frazier is probably the best guy that would be available. But it's probably something that you got to make happen sooner than later if it is going to be a thing, because you're not getting any value out of having him play in AAA while having this rotation be built the way it currently is. So it's not to say that the pressure is on. I mean, they're 16 games over 500. They're tied in the loss column with the Red Sox. So there isn't a great fear necessarily that things are getting out of hand. It's nothing along those lines. But there's no reason for this team to have, and I mean, you just went through it. Severino's a Cy Young caliber guy. They have him there. But past that, Tanaka looks like he's never ever going to be able to hit that potential that everybody thought that he was going to be, that dominant ace. Sonny Gray, it turns out the trade was, while it was a valiant move, it's just not going to be worth it. He's just not what the Yankees were hoping for. And CeCe's just not going to repeat what he did last year, and they don't even have a fifth guy. So there, when you look at that, they have such a great need that to have that abundance of hitting, you have to make a move, and I think it should be sooner than later. It's not to say to panic, but I would be on the phones.
Well, I have no doubt that Cashman's on the phone. This is what he does. No doubt. But, you know, it's not selling season yet. You
That's
know,
true.
You
That's
do have
true.
Haves and have-nots in baseball, but it's not quite selling season yet. And a lot of these teams, it's just like your fantasy owners. It's the same thing. You know, they don't want to make a deal. They think they can get better. You know, so it's hard to make a deal on, you know, and this time, Memorial Day weekend. You know, you're looking forward to, you know, the trade deadline's 2 months away. So maybe, oh, if I make a deal now, I might be able to get something better on July 4th. And maybe I should wait. You know, or if, are we really out of it? We're really not contenders now? You're going to hear a lot of that. You know, and it's just tough. The Yankees still have prospects to deal. Even if you want to take out, and listen, Gleyber Torres is not being traded. That's not happening. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no chance Judge Sanchez is going away. That's not happening either. I think anybody after that is game, depending on the player, including Miguel Andujar. Because once again, the Yankees can cover for that. You know, Brandon Drury, Neil Walker, they can cover that for this year. And there are plenty of third basemen available on the trade market. You know, third base is where it's heavy. You know, obviously Chapman, Machado, if they wanted to go after him, which once again, I don't see Baltimore trading Machado to the Yankees, but you can certainly sign him in the offseason. So you can cover your third base problem. Josh Donaldson's available. I think Toronto would trade with him in division, by the way, if they got the deal for a good deal for Donaldson. They got to take whatever they can get at this point. Mike Moustakas, and it goes on and on. So third base is out there. So, like I said, if Andujar is the player who had to go, and I'm not saying I want him to go. I like him. But if he's the player who had to go to get you that pitcher, it could be done. You know, the Yankees wouldn't suffer this season, or in my mind, or in the long haul. They'd be fine. And they got other players in the minor leagues. Esteban Florial is the guy. That's really where they trade Blake Rutherford and some others there. They think he's the next big thing in center field, but he's 2 years away. Albert Abreu, a pitcher. I don't think they'll trade Justice Sheffield either. Left-hander they acquired in the Andrew Miller deal, who, like I said, has most scouts think he could be a starting pitcher, too, in the American League, in the Major League Baseball, and he's pretty close to being ready. Like I said, I think he will help the team this season. You know, then you go a little lower. Dylan Tate, who they acquired for Carlos Beltran. Luis Medina. They have one of the top minor league systems in baseball. So they have talent to deal that really still won't hurt them. You know, and they're going to be under the luxury cap either way, so they can reinforce with one of the top name free agents next year anyway. So it's more about this season now to get that pitcher. The problem for the Yankees is who?
Yeah.
Actually, there's just not a lot out there right now. I said Cole Hamels can be had. Texas is definitely going to deal, and they'd like to deal Hamels, get rid of that $20 million for next season. But he's really not the answer. Not for October. He'll make you a better team than in a regular season. But like I said, he's not the kind of guy that you can guarantee. He's not an ace. And not that you can be able to find an ace, but he's probably more of an SP3. And you know, you're sort of loaded with that. You know, guys who are around the same. He's a tick better than that, but still not the guy they truly need. They need somebody who can go down and, you know, lock down an opponent, let that offense work its magic. You know, right now the Yankees' biggest problem is, as good as the offense is, the pitching's worse. You know, they don't give them time to hit. They're still down 7-4 before they get a chance. You saw that last night. You know, I think Gray will get better, absolutely. But as you said, and I agree, I don't think he's ever going to be the pitcher the Yankees thought they were getting. You know, I didn't like that trade at the time because I wasn't a big Sonny Gray fan, mainly because of the injuries he always suffers. I don't like trading for injured players who get hurt all the time. Mm-hmm. But the Yankees, he's never hurt. He's just pitching poorly.
Yeah. You know, one of the things is, that came from this game. We had Ohtani up against the Yankees, and that was a story where a lot of people thought that he was going to end up being on the Yankees. Obviously, that move never worked out. But there was something I saw on rotoexperts.com that I do want to run by just on the topic of trades. But obviously, this is now more so fantasy-related. And then we had a special article come up from insideinjuries.com. And the premise is basically that it's time to trade Shohei Ohtani if you are a fantasy owner of him. And really what it comes down is you're not going to the number of innings that he's meant to pitch and the number of at bats that he's supposed to see. Minor injuries have a massive impact on his overall value, and he's already had a number of them, right? Ligament sprain in his hand, he had a blister on his throwing hand, an ankle sprain, and they're not gigantic injuries, but they pile up a lot quicker for him than they do for other guys just because of the fact that he's splitting the time and all of those things. And George, what is your reaction to the idea that fantasy owners should look to move on from Ohtani now before it would be too late?
Well, when we say move on, what are we doing? We're going to try and trade him? Good luck. Mm. Everybody knows the issue here. The man's great, but they're not using him. He only bats, what, 4 days a week or so on average because they don't want him batting before the day he pitches or after the day he pitches. So that kills a couple of games. They go into a 6-man rotation, so that kills his value there. You know, it's one start a week. That start might be great, but you're never going to get that 2-start week. And now they want to watch his whatever they're doing. The 6-man rotation wasn't enough to protect them, but you need now to sit him for a couple of the starts, which is what it looks like it's going to be, because they want to pitch, I think I heard, 2 bullpen sessions, which figure one will be today and one will be, I don't know, Wednesday, and then maybe he pitches Sunday. Yeah, strange. Just strange that they felt they needed to do this with this guy. And I'm guessing this was negotiated in here where they wanted to make sure. Weird. Just weird. I mean, yeah, you'd like to say trade him, but what kind of value do you think you're getting back in return? You know, unless the owner you're trading with doesn't know what's going on, okay, good luck. I mean, I think that the talent is great, absolutely great, but in fantasy, he's a problem, yeah, because he doesn't bat enough, really, for you to play him all week. And in a daily lineup, you're fine. You know, if you have daily lineup changes or actually DFS, you're fine. But in a weekly lineup, yeah, it's definitely an issue here. But we knew this going in. None of this is a surprise. We knew about the 6-man rotation. We knew about the fact that he wouldn't hit the day before or after he pitches. So if you drafted him, and I did in the league because I wanted to have a share just in case, you know, you get what you deserve here. If you drafted him in 4 leagues, well, you probably didn't pay enough attention.
I think that is very well said. And, you know, it's one of those things where you have to try to be a little bit ahead of a curve instead of behind the curve. Another name that is mentioned in that article is David Price. And it pretty much says in fantasy baseball, 2 ways to win. You have to maximize player value and you got to minimize risk. And with as good as David Price has been and the fact that, you know, he kind of entered this season with a dead arm and this could really fall out very quickly from him, that could be another guy. So a pair of starting pitchers, if you own them, who they've been good for you, maybe it could be time to move on. We're going to get into some of those real trades that did happen just a couple of days ago here on Fantasy Sports Today. Keep it locked.